Hello there. Thank you so much for joining us for Market Sense. I'm Heather Hedgetis with Fidelity. So last week, stocks hit their first stumble of the year, but we did get an encouraging jobs report that came out on Friday, and that gave investors reason to celebrate because it found that U.S. payrolls rose in March by the most in nearly a year. It also found the unemployment rate dropped, again, pointing to a strong labor market that is powering the economy. So to talk about what that means for investors, we are joined today, as we often are, by Jurjen Timmer, Fidelity's Director of Global Macro. Also, our topic today is saving for what matters most, and it is the theme of this year's America Saves Week, which just kicked off yesterday. So America Saves is a nonprofit program whose mission is to increase financial confidence and stability for all Americans, and Fidelity is a proud supporter of that effort. And it's held in April because, you might not know this, but April is Financial Literacy Month. So we are so excited to dive into that topic today with Randell Lenore, who is a Chicago-based branch leader here at Fidelity, and she's going to be answering some of the questions that you submitted to us about this very topic last week. And thank you so much for doing that. And thank you, Randell and Jurjen, for joining us.
Happy Financial Literacy Month. It's great to be with you again.
Happy. We've all survived the eclipse day today. So
yeah. I knew we were going to talk about the eclipse. Yes.
I didn't turn into a zombie, so it's okay.
I'm so glad to hear that, Jurjen. You were saying where you were, it didn't even get totally dark, huh? You didn't see full totality?
No, believe it or not, we were shooting TikTok videos for Fidelity yesterday, and we went outside, but it turned into a sliver, but it stayed light out. So I'm like, okay, I'm glad I didn't change my life for this event. So
the sun is stronger than we think, right? Really?
It is stronger than we think. So again, yesterday was not just the eclipse, but it was also the start of America Saves Week. I'm excited to get into that discussion. But first, let's talk about the latest headlines, as we often start the show by doing. So today is Tuesday, April 9th. And I just kind of wanted to talk about the overall strength of this economy, Jurjen, because I feel like every week we're finding data points that prove that it's stronger and stronger. Forecasts of a recession seem to be fading now. A soft landing is starting to look even more likely. So I'm wondering for you, what are these latest data points pointing to with a strong economy mean for the upcoming earnings season, which we're about to enter? What does it mean for equities? And while we're at it, what does it mean for what the Fed might do?
So yes, so all signs or most signs, except for that inverted yield curve, which we've talked about in the past, but most signs are pointing to the economy kind of pivoting from that late cycle, you know, sort of limbo of last year back to mid-cycle. And that would happen in a soft landing. And so far, I mean, we never know perfectly in real time what's going to happen, but so far the evidence is pointing to that soft landing. And, you know, in a way, that's a little bit surprising because the Federal Reserve, as we all know, has really, really tightened policy over the last 2 years now. And so, you know, historically, that has often led to a recession, and we seem to be getting the opposite of that. And so this is sort of a, you know, good news is good news until it's too good and then it becomes bad news situation. So last week, we had a little bit of a wobble in the markets. I mean, nothing that I'm overly concerned about. But what happens is, you know, as we know, stock prices are driven by earnings, which are the most important driver. And of course, earnings tend to go up and down with the economy. So the fact that the economy is proving to be quite resilient is good for earnings. And earnings are lifting the boat for stock prices. But on the other side, we have interest rates. So if interest rates rise a little, all good, doesn't really affect the market. But if they rise too much, the market can get a little wobbly. And we saw that, of course, last October when the yield on the 10-year treasury went to 5%. So last week, the yield went to about 4.43 or so. And that kind of caused a little bit of a wobble. So it shows that the market remains sensitive to interest rates. And so it remains that balance. But the good news is that earnings are now growing at about 10% per year. And that is an important anchor for the market.
Okay. And that jobs report also just another data point showing how strong the economy is.
Yeah, it was. And it was the jobs report and also what we call the PMI, the Purchasing Managers Index. It's a host of indicators that just show that the economy remains on track.
Okay. So now we've got the first quarter behind us of 2024. What are some of the big takeaways for you, Jurjen? And what were some of the big sector winners?
So the first quarter really picked up where the last quarter of last year left off. So stocks did well, bonds did poorly. Probably the biggest sort of stealth winner that no one has really paid any attention to for a long, long time is the Japanese stock market, which was really right there neck and neck, up I think around 11 or 12%. So that's been kind of this the sleeper hit of the season, if you will. But it remains the same story that we had, you know, most of last year, especially the last quarter, where, you know, stocks do well, you know, again, driven by improving growth prospects. And, you know, bonds, I mean, I think there's a place for bonds in any investor's portfolio, but they're not doing what they did, you know, until 2 years ago, where they would go up when the stock market would go down. And so last week was, you know, kind of a little hint that when rates go up, the stock market can actually go down, even if it's just a little bit. And that is a new theme that I think is something that's worth keeping an eye on.
All right. Thank you, Urien, for that. I want to make sure we have enough time for our discussion today of saving for what matters most, because we got a lot of great questions from our viewers on this topic last week when we asked you what matters most to you. We said, what are your investment goals? So we're going to hit on some of your responses and priorities today. But first of all, you know, before you start even thinking about your dreams and goals, you got to make sure you're covered, right? You need to make sure you've planned for the unexpected through emergency savings. So Randell, let's bring you in. And can you first of all talk about that? How do we make sure we're covered?
Yeah, you know, it could be tough to think about this, right? It's not everyone's favorite topic, but I love what Urien just said. He said, good news is good news until it's not. Essentially, like, life can change quickly. Emergencies can come up and usually in so many unexpected forms, and so many of them cost money. You're thinking about short-term and long-term stuff. It's just job loss, or maybe you're changing a career, you're moving somewhere, or you have a health emergency, you have an emergency with your home or your housing. And, you know, when these things happen, you usually don't know where ends are going to meet. And many times we first rely on so many different types of insurance. So think about unemployment insurance, medical insurance, rental insurance, auto insurance, housing insurance. But as we know, as we've interacted with insurance companies before, it doesn't usually cover everything. Okay, so then what? Hopefully you have some emergency money set aside. So you see where I'm going with this. But say you don't, right? Maybe you need to take out a loan. Maybe you put it on your credit card, getting into more debt. Or maybe you have a 401k or long-term investment and you draw money from that, your long-term self, to handle your short-term self. And that can really lead to detrimental impacts. So when you don't have an emergency savings, it's like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut, right? Although it may not feel like it immediately, it's satisfying to really settle that need in the short term. It can really impact your broader financial picture. And what I think we're doing here on Market Sense is to help you be smart investors. And that means thinking about your whole picture, not just your investments. So Fidelity recommends that you save anywhere from 3 to 6 months worth of your essential expenses, and that's your emergency savings. And that should be parked in something liquid or cash-like. The key is reliable access, because you don't know when an emergency is going to happen. So you need to be able to draw that away. And that buffer that you build between your important things, like your peace of mind and your financial stability and life's emergencies, is a big deal. And that's a habit. It's not a set it and forget it. It's a setting aside a small amount monthly to address that, to replenish it, to make sure it's good.
All right. Well, first of all, yeah, that's exactly, you know, here on Market Sense, our goal is to try to make sure that people are looking at the whole financial picture. Even if you think you're a smart investor, you've got to make sure that you're covered in other ways. And like you said, a sledgehammer trying to crack a nut could really do some damage. So let's talk about another item that falls under the category of what saving for what matters most, and that would be college. You know, we're not talking with our audience about college for them. Of course, we're talking about college for your kids, or we're talking about maybe contributing to your grandkids' education. And as is the case with many goals, of course, how early you start can make a huge difference, Randall.
Yeah, and that's because college costs are growing at such a rapid rate, right? I know many of the viewers out there know the burden of handling student debt. I think data shows that a lot of people are handling student loan debt, whether they're the person that went to school or they're the parents taking care of the kids that have gone to school. At the same time, we're weighing that with the clear benefits we know about having higher education. And the key to this is to make sure that you have as much financial support as possible with this. So how much you may need to pay for college depends on a few things, like how many children or grandchildren you're planning for, or maybe you don't have kids, like kids that you really care about, making sure that they can get into school. How many years do they have? Will they attend a public or private school? Are you paying in-state or out-of-state tuition? And all of that's kind of handled as far as how much you're paying. So saving in tax-advantaged accounts can be one way to look at this. There's 529 savings plans. They can be beneficial because your earnings grow with the federal income tax deferred. And if you take the money out for qualified educational expenses, in fact, the federal income taxes are free for that. And some of them even have state tax deductions. So tax smart is really good. And then some savers worry about, like, okay, what if I put this money away for my kid or grandkid and they get to age 18 or 17 and they're like, I don't want to go to college, or they get a full scholarship, right? What do I do then? Well, the good thing about the flexibility about 529s is that you can name a new beneficiary for that, or you can even help them get started on something you know that they're hopefully able to do is retire, so you can roll that money into an IRA for that child or grandchild. But a few other things to consider here are helping your teen develop credit so that if they have to take on student loans, like many people do, they already have some experience, like the skills about how to manage debt, paying it on time, paying more than the minimum balance. And hopefully they have a credit score that gives them an optimal interest rate so that they're paying less over time. And, you know, learning how to interact with debt and credit is just a good financial skill. Again, like you're thinking about the holistic picture, but we have so many different resources that can help you teach your teens these skills and other skills on our website as well as our app. So hopefully you check that out.
And I know you have told me before, Randall, you wish that your parents had taught you about credit at a younger age. Obviously, you've got it all figured out now, but you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, not everybody is being taught it at a young age, and that needs to change. I know another big what matters most for our viewers and listeners is retirement, because people are living longer. They retire at 67 now. Fidelity is even making plans for people to live into their 90s, which is one reason why some people are choosing to work longer, or they are working longer. Maybe they need to work longer. So how should we be approaching saving for retirement in this day and age, Randall?
First, I want to acknowledge, to your point, like what retirement looks like is different for so many people. Some people see a more traditional retirement, like you just relax after a lifetime of working. You don't want the hustle and bustle of work life. And then we also encounter people who are like, I couldn't see myself not being actively engaged with my career, and I want to do it as long as possible. Or maybe I want to take on a part-time project or gig just to get out of the house. So regardless of how you envision what retirement looks like for you, it's important to be aware of the advantage of saving and investing in a workplace savings plan, an account that offers employment benefits to you. So be aware of all the options now so that you don't miss out. So some guidance that Fidelity has here that I really love is to kind of give you a number to think about. Am I saving enough? 15% is what we recommend that you aim to save pre-tax from your income every year. And that includes anything that your employer matches, and putting that into a workplace savings plan like a 401k. While saving 15% annually is a guideline, when you're getting closer, or if you're curious, just really know it's a benchmark. Like I mentioned before, everyone has a different vision about what retirement looks like for you. So if you want to make sure of that, you should, that's where working with a planner comes in. You can make sure that your savings rate is customized to what you want your retirement to be. And then also this other part is making sure that your money is as working as hard as it possibly can to get you where you're trying to be. And some people watching this may be wondering, if you're an entrepreneur, where can I put my money if I don't have a workplace plan? You have things like solo 401ks, SEP IRAs, simple IRAs that allow you to put extra money away. So talk to a professional for help on that. And then let me think, like, the largest expenses in retirement that people tend to encounter is healthcare, right? So if you have access to a high deductible plan and therefore an HSA, those have several tax advantages that you can put money into, and you don't need to take it out now. You can save it for the money that you'll need inevitably for retirement if you live long enough. And finally, know how much you can save in these different accounts. You have IRAs, 401ks, all these different accounts that I just put out. The government or the IRS part periodically changes the maximums on these, but they do have maximums because they have certain tax benefits. So be aware of what accounts you need, what the maximums are each year. Put as much as you can away and make sure your money's working as hard as it can.
Oh, there's so much to think about, Randell. And I know just a few weeks ago, we just did a Market Sense episode on Fidelity's study that just came out, the State of Retirement Planning Study, which found a lot of people are unretiring too. So I encourage you to check out that episode. That episode is still up right now. But I wanted to take this opportunity to bring Urien back for a moment, because Urien, Randell just walked us through some of the accounts that we should open. So we've opened the right account or accounts, we've put some money in there, and then what do we do next? How do we make sure, Urien, that the money is working as hard as we need it to towards our retirement? In other words, you know, how do we approach investing that money? And is there anything different about investing for retirement?
And by the way, I'm planning on keeping on working until they take my badge away. So maybe,
hope that is never, Urien, because we really need you.
But it's a great question. Dollar cost averaging is, the absolute, I think, ideal way to save for retirement if you start early or even if you start late. But the beauty about dollar cost averaging, which, by the way, is putting a little bit of money into the market, on a regular basis. So like a 401k, money gets taken out of your paycheck, goes right into a portfolio where it's invested according to, the goals and risk, parameters that every person has. And they tend to be different for every person. But the beauty of that is that you're never buying at the top, right? You're putting a few hundred away or whatever the number is every month. So you don't have to worry about, okay, what if I invest everything now and then the market goes down 20%? You don't need to worry about that with dollar cost averaging. You're also never going to get the bottom, of course, but you're going to get that in between. And historically, if you go back 100 years, you'll find that if you do that and you measure the success, let's say at 10-year increments, the vast majority of times your money will grow under that kind of approach. So that's a really good way to think about, investing for retirement. And of course, as Randell says, start early, save as much as you can. That brings in, compounding, the eighth wonder of the world. Even if the returns are not huge, if you compound them, if you repeat them on a regular basis for a long, long time, even small returns become really big amounts. And it's not just investing. It's like what you do at work or a skill or a hobby or how you treat people. All of that has, goes with the laws of compounding, that if you do this regularly over a long time, it's going to yield tremendous benefits.
I love that. I love that you are saying that compounding even equates to how you treat people. And it's the eighth wonder of the world. I love it, Urien. Thank you. It's like the golden rule. So now that you've got your investments in the right account and they're growing, another thing to talk about when we talk about retirement are risks. So, Randell, how do we protect ourselves from things that can kind of take us off track in retirement? And I did want to bring in a viewer question here quickly, because as I mentioned, we read all of your questions last week about this topic. One of our viewers wrote to us, quote, "We're in our 70s and concerned with allocating and maintaining savings for long-term health care. How do we manage our savings to cover long-term care without over-saving?" Randell, how would you respond to that?
Such a smart point to raise, by the way, because healthcare and possibly long-term care is expected to be one of the largest expenses and potential key risk when you're planning to retire and stay retired well. So I'm going to look at I have some numbers to kind of bring this in, right? So according to the Fidelity Retiree Healthcare Cost Estimate, the average retired couple, they're both age 65 and in 2022, may need approximately $315,000 saved after taxes to cover healthcare expenses in retirement. And this is just an estimate, and that doesn't even include long-term care. So then when you start to think about long-term care, there are studies that show that 70% of us will need some kind of extended care, or we'll have some kind of extended care event in our lives. And that means that, you know, maybe we'll need help getting around, maybe we'll need help eating or bathing. So basically, most of all of us, if we're blessed to live long enough, will likely need long-term care if we're able to live that long. So when you consider how much attention we were just talking about that you put into growing your money, handling emergencies and things like that, isn't it just as important to make sure that you're protecting your health and protecting your financial future when it comes to how these can impact the long term? So extended care costs can vary greatly. Let's go through a few common options. So nursing home care first. According to Genworth 2021 cost of care survey conducted by Care Scout, the median cost of a private room in a nursing home is more than $108,400 annually. And we have the sources for this below. And about a third of nursing home residents, they pay all of that from their own funds, So given that, you know, it won't be hard to believe that people just blow through all of their money in the first 6 months. So this is give you a frame of how important this is to plan for. And then there's home care, you know, generally more affordable than nursing home care, but it's still expensive. Our data shows that this costs an average of $61,777.6 a year. And these costs can rise significantly if, you know, somebody needs around-the-clock care. And then one more to just give you an idea of really what this looks like is assisted care living. The median cost of that we show is $54,000 a year. And that's why planning for these expenses is so important. You want to help make sure that your money lasts your lifetime and that we're realistic about what your lifetime might look like. So when you plan for retirement and you're planning for investments, I think it's really important to have a conversation with the people that you care about and professionals about what long-term care insurance looks like as part of a solid plan. And our advisors here at Fidelity can definitely help you with that.
All right, Randell, thank you so much for laying out a pretty clear long-term picture for us. By the way, we just skimmed the surface on a variety of topics that are pretty comprehensive today, but the conversation certainly does not need to end here. So we have more resources and tips up on fidelity.com/learn. All right, before we go, we'd like to end with Timmer's take. So Urien, what are you watching this week?
The inflation data, CPI tomorrow, that will tell us whether and when and how much the Fed might be able to cut rates. And then earnings season for the first quarter starts next week, which will be a good real-time barometer on the what we talked about the resilience in the economy.
All right. Excited to start talking about earnings season again. Urien, thank you. Randell, thank you. And as always, if you have questions about making a financial plan or staying on track, don't forget Fidelity can help. You can call us, go online to our website, or download Fidelity's app to learn more. Also, if you missed any part of the discussion, the replay is up for 24 hours on LinkedIn, or you can watch it by going to youtube.com/Fidelity or search MarketSense on Fidelity.com. While you're on there, you can leave a comment or a question. Your feedback does help us dig into the topics that are on your mind and help shape future episodes. So please keep the conversation coming. You also might not know this, by the way, but you can also listen to us as a podcast as well. On behalf of Urien and Randell, I'm Heather Hedges. Thanks so much for your time. We'll see you back here next week. We're on Tuesdays at 2 Eastern.
Fidelity does not provide legal or tax advice. The information herein is general and educational in nature and should not be considered legal or tax advice. Tax laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact investment results. Fidelity cannot guarantee the information herein is accurate, complete, or timely. Fidelity makes no warranty with regard to such information or results obtained by its use and disclaims any liability arising out of your use of or any tax position taken in reliance on such information. Consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific situation. Information presented herein is for discussion and illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of the date indicated based on the information available at that time and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the Fidelity speaker and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation directly or indirectly in connection with the management, distribution, or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Diversification and or asset allocation do not ensure profit or protect against loss. Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stocks involves risks, including loss of principal. Foreign markets can be more volatile than U.S. markets due to the increased risks of adverse issuer, political, market, or economic developments, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. These risks are particularly significant for investments that focus on a single country or region. Fixed income investments entail interest rate risk. As interest rates rise, bond prices usually fall. The risk of issuer or counterparty default, issuer credit risk, and inflation risk. Foreign securities are subject to interest rate, currency exchange rate, economic and political risks, all of which are magnified in emerging markets. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Fidelity Wealth Services provides non-discretionary financial planning and discretionary investment management through one or more portfolio advisory services accounts for a fee. The information provided here is general in nature. It is not intended, nor should it be construed as legal or tax advice. Because the administration of an HSA is a taxpayer's responsibility, customers should be strongly encouraged to consult their tax advisor before opening an HSA. Customers are also encouraged to review information available from the Internal Revenue Service, IRS for taxpayers, which can be found on the IRS website at www.irs.gov. They can find IRS Publication 969, Health Savings Accounts, and other tax-favored health plans, and IRS Publication 502, Medical and Dental Expenses, including the Health Coverage Tax Credit, online. Or you can call the IRS to request a copy of each at 800-829-3676. Units of the portfolio are municipal securities, and each portfolio is subject to certain risks, which may affect performance. Such risks include, but are not limited to, market risk, interest rate risk, foreign investment risk, credit risk, concentration risk, issuer risk, and management risk. These risks are covered in more detail in each college savings plan fact kit. In addition to these risks, there are other risks of investing in a 529 college savings plan, such as limited investment direction. The account owner may decide how assets are allocated by choosing portfolios. However, Fidelity selects the underlying mutual funds that compose each portfolio and also manages the mutual funds. Liquidity. Investments in a 529 college savings plan may be considered less liquid than other types of investments due to their limited circumstances, in which funds may be withdrawn without incurring adverse tax consequences. Risk of changes to structure or investment objectives of the plan. Changes made to the original structure or investment objectives of a 529 plan, including any increase in fees and or expenses, may render it less favorable to investors. Legislative risk. Laws, both federal and state, affecting 529 college savings plans may change, which could adversely affect the account owner or beneficiaries. Financial aid eligibility. Contributions to a 529 plan may adversely affect the participants or beneficiaries' eligibility for financial aid or other benefits. Please carefully consider the plan's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses before investing. For this and other information on any 529 college savings plan managed by Fidelity, contact Fidelity for a free fact kit or view one online. Read it carefully before you invest or send money. ETFs are subject to market fluctuation and the risks of their underlying investments. ETFs are subject to management fees and other expenses. Unlike mutual funds, ETF shares are bought and sold at market price, which may be higher or lower than their NAV, and are not individually redeemed from the fund. Advisory services offered by Fidelity Personal and Workplace Advisors, LLC, FPWA, a registered investment advisor. Discretionary portfolio management services provided by Strategic Advisors, LLC, Strategic Advisors, a registered investment advisor. Brokerage services provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, FSB, and custodial and related services provided by National Financial Services, LLC, NFS. Each a member, NYSE and SIPC. FPWA, FBS, and NFS are Fidelity Investments companies. This information is intended to be educational and is not tailored to the investment needs of any specific investor. Personal and workplace investment products are provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC, 900 Salem Street, Smithfield, Rhode Island, 02917.